Good afternoon, Aggies and fellow listeners. You're listening to Aggie Radio. You can check them out on their website or their Facebook page. There's lots of recorded podcasts they have on aggieradio.com, where you can listen to previous shows of all the wonderful groups and the recent histories of including our show. I'm Jake Grossman, and this is Mindfulness on Air. For those of you that have tuned in and listened to our show, you know all about it. But stay tuned, because it's always changing. Lots of new stuff is coming out. Wonderful guests. Those of you who haven't listened, this is a show about mindfulness and meditation. So really, what mindfulness is a way of paying attention to the present moment in a non-judgmental way, being present, using techniques such as meditation, yoga, breathing. So it's a way to allow ourselves to be present with what is happening, aware of our thoughts and feelings, aware of the entire world that's going on within us, around us. So mindfulness is just, it can be a tool. It can be a whole path in and of itself of meditation, can support any other practice you have. It can be a whole way of life. So what it's really all about, using these techniques, meditation, is helpful to live a centered, grounded, aware, and awake life, to connect with what's going on within us, who we are. It can be self-discovery, deepen our relationships with others, connect us with the environment, the earth, to really just start being aware of all the wonderful things that are happening. Lots of times we focus on the negative. Negative things do happen, things we do not particularly care for happen, but at the same time, so many positive things are also happening. So when we're present and aware of what's going on, not only does that stop the wandering mind and allow us to settle in, have a little more clarity, but it also allows us to release the reins a little bit on that wanting mind. When this happens, or when I can get rid of this, then I'll be happy. And the reason why it's good to do once in a while is because then it allows us to focus on what is happening, what we do have, the good things that are happening around us, within us, the things we do have. There's tons of limitations we're all facing, but at the same time, there's many, many things that we can do and do have as well. And so it's just a wonderful opportunity to have an open curiosity, inquire into this. And like I said, it's all about developing these abilities to have these skills, or even just a tool to help a little bit with maybe anxiety, depression. There's all sorts of benefits that scientific studies are finding. Many teachers talk about, as you've heard from previous guests. But really, you can spend your time reading academic journals and finding out what they're studying and what they've found. But you can also just dive right in and just experience this, experience your own mind and what's going on there, and really just experience it for yourself and find that inner well-being, that connection to yourself, that grounded clarity, allowing the murky glass of water to kind of settle and have a little more clarity to then see what's important and how to go about your day effectively. And so today I have another wonderful guest on, so you guys are in luck. A real treat for you today. Have on Nithya Shanti. He's actually a teacher. This is what he does. He teaches meditation locally when he's here. He's traveling around the world, doing what would normally be called retreats and workshops, even for corporations, for the public, for really anybody that's interested. But he actually calls them joy shops. He's a wonderful, wonderful being, very influential on my own life and many that are here in the Valley that have gone, heard his teachings, and just really his presence. He doesn't come off as having all the wisdom or all these insights. It just has a wonderful, charismatic presence. And I'm very, very honored to have him here today and have him on the show. So, among all his other wonderful accomplishments, here he is today. So welcome to the show, Nithya.
Thank you, Jake. It's lovely to be here with you.
So what I typically ask our guests and various people who come on, and even myself, as time goes by and the mind evolves and our experiences change, is even though I've read a little bit of a definition of what mindfulness and meditation kind of is, kind of a working hypothesis, so there's some consistency and people know the direction, what we're even talking about in the beginning, which may not help when they're like, what is this guy talking about? But what does meditation mean to you?
Very nice. Yes. Well, there are many ways in which one can describe it. One very simple way of describing it is meditation is an intimate meeting with yourself. And an intimate meeting is different from an ordinary meeting. An ordinary meeting may have judgment, may have preferences, may have opinions about how you're doing, who you are, how you should be. An intimate meeting is so close that there's no room left for judgment. There's no room left for past or future. It's just a connection. So for me, meditation is an intimate meeting with oneself, with one's own true self. It's also, another way of saying it is, an awareness of whatever is happening without worrying about the outcomes. So these are some simple ways of describing meditation.
Which is very wonderfully put, even poetically. But why exactly is that helpful? Why would... I can intuitively sense that that sounds really nice, but what is this? What is so effective about meeting myself and noticing what's going on around?
Yeah. In fact, that's the question even I put to my first meditation teacher. Before I went for my first meditation course, I asked him, so why do people meditate? And he said, we meditate to be truly happy. So I smiled and said, I'm already happy. I didn't like his answer. He said to me, you think you're happy. So I said, what do you mean? Yeah, I think I'm happy. I am happy. So I didn't like that. But when I went for that first meditation course, that's when I realized that actually there was a lot of truth to what he said. Because superficially I was happy because I was distracted. I would listen to music, I'd hang out with friends, I'd do things I'd like. But just beneath that superficial layer was a whole storm of discontentment. There was a whole storm of self-judgment and maybe unreconciled relationships and things that I was holding, judgments towards my parents, towards myself. And it was amazing because, you know, we distract ourselves in so many different ways. Modern society, there's almost no end. Our phones have 1,000 distractions right there with music and articles and podcasts and so many things. So there are so many ways to distract ourselves. But when you, for a moment, stop distracting yourself and just meet yourself and just connect with yourself, just the way you are. Now, this is a foundation of true understanding, true wisdom. In the beginning, it can be unsettling. It's unsure of, you know, what is going on here. And, you know, if people ask, so what is the point of meditating? What is the use of meditating? What is the use of anything we do in life? Why do we do anything? You know? And there's a nice way of approaching this. You ask someone why 7 times. So suppose someone says, I want to go to university. Really? Why do you want to go to university? Oh, because I'm interested in studying this. Oh, really? Why do you want to study that? Oh, so I can get good at it. What will happen if you get good at it? I'll get a job. What will happen if you get a job? I'll get paid. What will happen if you get paid? And you see, you ask 6 or 7 times, oh, so I get paid, I'll have a family, and then I'll be happy.
Right.
So it's always, if you ask enough number of times, 7 or more times, why are you doing something, it always comes down to, I want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us, so I would say all of us, are looking for happiness, whether you call it that or not,
mm-hmm.
one way or the other. And we all have a mental model or we have a mental map of what it would take for us to be truly happy. For someone, it's about being fit and having a certain kind of body. For someone, it's having a certain kind of relationship or maybe having a certain kind of family. For someone, it's about making a certain kind of contribution in the world. And yet we've seen that with all of these things, many people have done these things. There's a famous professor of positive psychology, Dan Goleman, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, or is it Dan Gilbert? I'm forgetting his name. Perhaps it's Dan Gilbert. He says that anything that you think will make you happy, go interview a person, go meet a person who's already done that.
Right.
And you might save yourself years of effort. So we can run around trying to look outside an outside-in approach to satisfaction and happiness. And then the simple question is, if happiness is experienced inside, does it really require something to change on the outside? Can you approach it more directly? So this was when, and again, perhaps telling me about it didn't do it. Actually experiencing it is what really was a breakthrough for me. So that first meditation course, I had a few glimpses of what I would call natural happiness, or I would say happiness for no reason.
Unconditional. Yes.
So I think that's the real taste of it. That's the real joy of it. And I think it's we owe it to ourselves to connect with something that is not based on reasons or accomplishments or something happening first and then for us being happy.
Right.
See, anything that can be brought about by causes and effects will also go away when those causes and effects dissipate. So that's obviously not a very strong foundation.
Yeah, so with your initial answer and mine as well, and probably most people, when they've had those conditions met or just distracted enough, like you said, say, well, I am happy, but it's built up on a shaky foundation. And I'm not saying that what we are, families or a job or school, is not a valid reason to be happy. But it seems to be that when we invest all of it, depending on that, mm-hmm. that if those things don't work out, then you're at a loss. Then you have no way to be happy, when really there's people without that who are, mm-hmm. and people that have that who aren't happy. I really like how you said it all just comes back to that feeling of happiness, or the unconditional, that well-being that isn't just, it's natural, mm-hmm. as you said, mm-hmm. not just based on the conditions working out a certain way. So if I can do this right or that right, then I'll be happy. Is it really just points back that inner feeling, that contentment is inside? It's a very important part you just brought up, that when you do feel that satisfaction with it, with family, with whatever it is, the felt quality is inside. It's mm-hmm. what's felt. And so what would be a helpful way to reflect that back? Because I've mentioned before on here, when we've had someone else mention just exactly that, it seems to be that it's a trigger. We've had that accomplishment, or we've had that thing happen, and we've released that grasping, that desire has quote unquote been fulfilled. And for that moment, not the grasping mind, but that object, we feel like it gave us some satisfaction because we went inside. we stopped looking out. We turned around like, oh, I have this.
Mm.
And that it was the turnaround. It was the trigger that we thought that's what made us happy.
Mm.
But it was we quit looking outwards and finally just kind of sat with ourselves.
Mm.
That's when we felt content. But we thought it was the object because we weren't aware.
Mm.
You think comes down to awareness? Or what would be helpful ways to kind of turn that around? Because most people, I would think, we intuitively say, it must be that, because I'm lacking that. And so therefore I need that, and I'm incomplete without it.
So I'll just share a few things that helped me get to, what you're asking about, what you're talking about. One big realization for me was the quality of my thinking has a very big effect on the quality of my experience. So I can go to the most so-called happening party in town, but if I'm feeling out of place, it's not a happening party for me. All that's happening is stress for me.
<Right. laughs>
So the quality of my thoughts determine the quality of my experience. I can be with my best friend, but if I'm thinking he's selfish, it's not a very good experience. Or I can be with someone I've just met, and if I'm thinking, oh, this seems like a very genuine person, a very authentic person, someone I'd like to get to know better, then that becomes a very deep connection in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I summarize this is, what the thinker thinks, the prover proves. Whatever you think, you find evidence for. And whatever you think, it you could say it tints your experience. Like, putting on glasses,
right.
The color of your glasses determines the color of the universe you see. So I actually summarize all my teachings down to two things, or I would say three things at the most. One is intention, which is another way of saying thoughts, or
mm-hmm.
the stories that we tell. Second is attention, which is awareness, presence. And the third is, you could call it foundation, or you could call it even connection. And I want to just briefly talk about these three things, which perhaps will inform how we can come back to that inner sense of being settled within ourselves. So the first kind of thought is a thought of a victim. First kind of a thought is, other people should change before I'm happy. The reason I'm unhappy is my wife's a certain way, my mother is a certain way, my boss is a certain way, the world is a certain way, and all of them have to change first and I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a great way to suffer. It's a great way to guarantee that you're going to be feeling weak and dejected, and there's a lot of blaming and complaining in the state.
And also points out just how arbitrary it is.
Exactly.
Because when those aren't there, you tend to still not.
Right, right.
There's somebody else to fill in
exactly,
the blank.
Exactly.
Or something.
So this can be known, I actually call this no happiness. This is simply no happiness because you're always focusing on what's wrong mm-hmm. and how everybody else has to change. So these are very dark thoughts. These are very heavy thoughts, victim thoughts. The second kind of thought is thoughts on possibility. So instead of focusing on the problem, you focus on, okay, what can we do about it? How can we change it? How can we improve it? How can we make it better? And so thoughts of possibility are thoughts of someone who's a creator, someone who's ambitious, someone who works towards a goal, someone who wants to achieve something. And compared to the first kind of thought, this is certainly much more, it's a much more strong place. However, it's also future-oriented. It's waiting again for something to happen. And as much as we're able to accomplish, to that extent, we're feeling happy. It's focusing on getting, it's like an outside-in approach to happiness. So instead of the first one saying, things are so bad and things aren't working out, you say, okay, I'm going to make it happen. And you're waiting for things to happen. This is the second kind of happiness. You could call it a creator. Or mm-hmm. you say happiness. I sometimes call it happiness for a misguided reason or happiness for a wrong reason. Why? Because you're waiting for something to happen. So when that happens, when I have something, when I have more of something, then I'm going to be happy. So it's getting better, but it's not there yet. The third kind of thought, we call it happiness for a good reason. And this is where instead of focusing on, so instead of doing things for happiness, we do things from happiness. Hmm. Now that's very interesting. So instead of saying I'm going to, you know, win that competition, then I'll feel so happy. So I'm going to feel happy on my way to preparing for the competition and giving my best in the competition. And I'm going to rejoice. It's such as participating is what's really enjoyable. And the real competition is growing in my abilities and my skills. So this is, we call it happiness for a good reason, because it's an inside out kind of happiness. So instead of wanting the outer world to be a certain way, we are changing our inner world. And like I said, when you change your way of thinking, your experience changes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is intention. These are three dimensions of intention. And then we come to attention in the present moment. Living in the present, being aware of whatever is happening. So as I'm here now, being aware of speaking is happening, some seeing is happening, some hearing is happening. There may be some feelings in the body that's happening. And this is a very powerful place, this living in the present moment. As you're in the present moment, you get a taste of what I mentioned earlier, this natural happiness. Happiness for no reason. You're just connected, you're just being. And if you're really present, even the sense of identity, because if you're fully in the present, there is no name, there is no religion, there is no age, there is no gender, there is no nationality, there is no opinion. There's just presence. It's just the emptiness, the transparency of this moment. And this is a gateway to something even beyond. And I would call that foundation. It's who you really are. And we can't really describe that, because in order to describe it, again, you have to come to the world of thoughts and images and
labels.
A description is, again, it's your way of using your sense doors to describe something. But this is not something that can be seen. This is that which is seeing.
But can be felt from the inside as an experience.
You could call it that. You could call it that. At the same time, I would even say, well, what is experiencing the experience? Right? It is that which even feels.
Hmm.
So feelings come close, but they're still only that close. It is that which is even aware of the feeling. Right? So it's who we really are. And that's so close, like the eye can't see itself. Right?
Right.
The thumb can't touch itself unless it touches something else. The thumb doesn't really touch itself, right? In the same way, it's so close. It's like in meditation, we say the paradox of meditation is we're teaching you how to enter a room you're already in. So this is one way I summarize my teachings: intention, attention, foundation, or you could even call it connection. Intention is the different kinds of stories we are telling, the kind of thoughts we're having, victim thoughts, possibility thoughts. And thoughts of coming from a space or whatever you're intending for, feeling that inside and then living from it, as opposed to waiting for it to happen sometime in the future. Being in the present moment. And with these two things, I would say intention, attention, as you get more skillful in this, your foundation starts to reveal itself. You start resting. You talked about in the beginning of this program that this is about being more centered. This is about mm-hmm. being more stable. This is about having a foundation that's more solid. And that's the foundation we get in touch with. It's once you even begin getting glimpse of that, all of our life starts getting It's, you know, it's like you put a magnet on a table and all the surrounding metal fillings get organized.
Mm-hmm.
It's an organizing principle. It brings a certain order and balance and strength. And I would say, what do you say? It's, you don't get shaken up so easily by things.
Right. That's exactly what I was just thinking. I was thinking of leaf blowing in the wind. We're not jumping on, well, things are going good because this or this, and now I'm happier. It's with these, whatever we're identified with, or things or objects, and it's going okay, so now I'm happy. It's really not even about that at all. It's settling in to it is okay, and you are who you are. We just haven't met that person yet, because we're always putting up filters in between that presence, that foundation, and who we really are. So, as you said, it's a organized, balanced way, instead of just really being blown around by each new experience that happens or doesn't happen. So it's really neat, from the inside out, experiencing happiness from the inside out.
The leaf analogy is very good, because my teacher once said that the nature of a leaf is to be still. It's only the wind that blows it about. The actual nature of the leaf is to be completely still. So our own true nature is immaculately still. What blows it about is a sense of, I don't have enough of this, or I need to get rid of this, or I'm just confused, or who am I? And all of this making some kind of an image in the mind about how it should be, could be, would be. We have the great Zen teaching which says, the great way is not difficult for one who has no preferences. Make the slightest distinction, however, heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. So the moment we make distinctions between I and you, good and bad, like and dislike, high and low, wanting and not wanting, this is what creates the confusion in our mind. And it's all right to use those words, as long as we know they're just words.
Mm-hmm.
They're just thoughts, they're just opinions. They're not real by themselves.
Right. Could have labeled it, called it anything else. It's a label that enough people are agreeing on.
Exactly.
And it's really not too lofty. That sounds, in one way, really lofty. The great way is not difficult for the one without preferences. But at the same time, I think that really resonates with a lot of people when we stop to think about it. But it's even deeper than that, because you are that. Just you rest in it. And so it's not just... we tend to think accepting means just, well, whatever. Either a don't care attitude or a doormat attitude. And kind of miss how without preferences isn't saying I condone everything and just treat me however, or have a don't care attitude. It's really being with what is.
Yes.
And that's why it seems to be so powerful, is because you're not in a story. You're not believing an identity that you've made up, or that somebody else has given you, or that we've believed for this for so long. So there's a lot less energy wasted fulfilling all those, holding up that mask, this persona, and also a real feeling of home, because we're settling into that. It just seems like we're never noticing who we are, what's been happening this entire time. And so it's not giving up preferences in that way. To me, at least,
The Buddha actually called it the middle way, you know. And the reason he called it that was, you're not going to one extreme or the other. So there's a nice quote which says that the gift of the East is to accept things the way they are. The gift of the West is to make things better.
But
by itself, the gift of the East by itself becomes a sense of just stagnation. You know, okay, just things just are the way they
are.
Right? And don't worry about it. And then even the things we can change and improve, we don't do that. And in the West, it becomes just a blind chase for making things better. So my phone, no matter how good it is, in a year, it's going to be an old phone, outdated phone, and I can barely even use it anymore. Because this thirst of making things better, it's just consuming of the whole planet.
Mm-hmm.
Always making things better. We're never satisfied. In fact, we plan obsolescence into our products now because they have to be better, right? We have to throw them away. So I think it's somewhere in between. And in fact, this is a very common question I get, that if I just accept things, then how will life go on? How will the world improve? And that's a very good point. So acceptance by itself becomes stagnation. And vision by itself becomes blind ambition. You're just running and you don't even know why you're running. So it's actually a combination of the two. So a good analogy is someone's in their car and they sit in their car, but they don't even put on the ignition. Now this is acceptance, but okay, but where you're not going anywhere, you're sitting there in your car.
Right.
And even if you put on your car, you're just driving aimlessly in town. You have no clue where you're going, why you're going. You're just wasting fuel, wasting your time. So this is blind acceptance. The other one is vision. And this person is in such a rush to get to their destination, they're endangering everyone's life. They're cutting through red lights and they're just driving at a great speed. And it's very reckless the way they're driving. Now, this is blind ambition, because in your thirst to get somewhere, you're hurting people around you. You're hurting your own health. In corporate world, we say we spend half our life earning money and losing our health. And we spend the other half of our life getting back our health, spending all our money.
and the whole time racing to our grave.
Exactly.
Preparing or getting securities to when life will be okay and I can enjoy
it.
And then that's when we're dead.
Exactly. And just to complete that, so for me, you know, the balance between this contentment and this vision. Contentment and vision don't have to be mutually exclusive. I can be driving my car, which means I'm driving, I'm present, I'm seeing what's in front of me. At the same time, I know I have to meet Jake at USU. I have a vision as well. The vision doesn't have to interfere with my driving the car. So you can be fully present. It can also be informed by a vision of what you want to do. And like that, it's actually not, it's beautiful. They come together. And this I call gratitude. Gratitude is a balance of contentment and vision together. It's a great attitude.
And that's exactly why I'm grateful for mindfulness in this practice of being with what is, settling down, because that's how I know at least a little more effectively than my normal, ordinary mind running around. But that's the only way I'm going to see in a clear way of when I can make a difference, what my actions will do. So instead of, I don't know if you folks listening, of either doing a work project at home or homework, instead of getting on top of that, we're complaining about the weather. or just fill in the blank, really. But it's almost... Sometimes we think that's a way to connect with people, but it's almost like we're just really confused and actually thinking that's going to solve something, worrying about something we can't do and avoiding things we do have. We may not be able to ace our classes. We may not be able to get all the promotions. We may not always meet those goals and that vision we have, but there will be a lot more clarity and know how to go about those and the things we can change. So it's being with what is, appreciating what we do have, valuing what we do have, not feeling like it's worthless because we're chasing the next thing. So it's valuing what's here. And at the same time, knowing that, hey, this can help settle the mind down so I can see a little bit more clearly about the things I can do and the things I can't do to effectively go about our lives.
So. Can I share a story that I'm remembering? It's a story of Alexander the Great. And you know that if in terms of kings who have had big success in terms of conquest, I think he's just the greatest person who stands out. He probably conquered more territories that we know. And he came to India, and somebody introduced him to so-called wise man. This is a very wise man.
Mm-hmm.
So Alexander is very skeptical. So he goes to meet him. And this man is sitting there. He's just wearing a loincloth and nothing else. Alexander, you know, makes smirks and says, you know, who the hell are you? And, you know, what is this? What do you have that I don't have? What's so special about you? And the man just smiles. So the man asks him a question. The sage asks him a question. He says, tell me, if I met you in a desert and you're very thirsty and I have a bottle of water, how much will you pay me for that bottle of water? I'll pay you 100 gold coins. 100 gold coins. Don't want that. Okay, I'll pay you 500 gold coins. Don't want your gold coins. So he kept raising the stakes until he came to, all right, I'll give you half my kingdom. If I'm that thirsty and you're the only one who has water, I'll give you half my kingdom for that bottle of water. And the man smiled. He said, oh, if you give me half your kingdom, then I have to just wait for a few more days. You'll give me your whole kingdom. So the man, Alexander, was surprised and he thought about it. He said, actually, it's true. If truly I'm that thirsty, I'm dying of thirst, and you're the only one who has water, I might actually give you my whole kingdom. And then the sage starts laughing loudly. He says, why are you laughing? He says, so all of this, wiping his tears from his eyes, all of this you're doing is just for a bottle of water? So the point is that, you know, we can accomplish all kinds of things in life, but we can only enjoy them by being present with them. And so this is, we're talking about the value. Why do we meditate? Because if you don't learn to be present, you can have the best house in the world, you can't enjoy it. You can have the best family in the world, you can't enjoy it. Because the real connection, the real appreciation, the real enjoyment, the real experience of it only happens when you're present. A famous teacher of India, Swami Vivekananda, he said, you can look with eyes, you can hear with ears, but you can't experience unless you're present. So I could be looking at you, but if I'm not present, then I don't experience you.
Mm-hmm.
I can be hearing what you're saying, but if I'm not present, I don't listen to you, I don't understand you, I don't connect with you. So you see, we can have outwardly the most amazing life and inwardly feel completely empty and disconnected. Like Woody Allen said, most people are living 2.5 feet away from themselves. 2.5 feet away from their body. So, you know, we're just disconnected, we're disembodied. Disembodied spirits. So meditation is about making us embodied and present and awake and alive and bringing back the life to our eyes, you know, as opposed to the zombified look that many people face. You look at their faces in big cities, and they look at you, but they look through you. You know, it's like, oh, they're just like zombies. There's nobody there. You know, knock, knock.
So somebody in the way, or on my way to my next.
Exactly. Right.
We can't enjoy what we already have when we're wanting something else.
That's true.
And just the smallest things.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm even listening to Rick Hansen. Lots of research in neuroscience and. Mm-hmm. Talking about the wiring of the brain. And the exercises he's talking about are just small. But if you do it enough, it rewires, it makes those connections. And some of them are just focusing on what is right, what is going okay in your life. Mm-hmm. And that may just be, you know, I spent some time with my wife today. Mm-hmm. That may be, got to see my nephew. Could be really ordinary things. Could be having that glass of water. Yeah. And the key, though, is being aware of that, knowing that this is actually a wonderful thing to have right now. And a mansion or a promotion will not replace this moment, It won't replace the fulfillingness, that connection with somebody else, with life as it is. It won't make that happen, because then you still have to be aware and embodying that. Feeling that.
You're reminding me of a teacher of mine. He's a Buddhist monk, and
go on.
He would drink water with such awareness, you could just see it. It was mesmerizing just seeing him drinking water. And as you talked about briefly about drinking water, I just felt that, you know, you could even hear him gulping down that water. And he was just, and every time he drank water with such a lot of awareness, that was a full experience for him, you know, to be drinking that glass of water. So I still remember the smallest of things, and we bring our attention into it, in a way it's like all of life opens up. And you know, in today's world, which is obsessed with speed, and everything has to be faster, the internet has to be faster, and communication has to be faster, and can we have an executive summary for an executive summary, can we have a Twitter, like one line that describes everything, in this world of more and more and faster, shorter and shorter, there's also increasing sense of disconnection, increasing sense of alienation. And so instead of moving at the speed of thought, which is what all of this is about, the invitation in meditation and mindfulness is to move at the speed of life. And you know what? Life actually is faster than thought. Because this moment is fresh. It's new. Any thought you can have about this moment is coming from the past. So the thought is always slower than the present. The present is always, it's here before any thought can ever come. Right? So if you really want to be on the cutting edge, on the bleeding edge, on the beyond the edge, jump, you want to get over the edge. The way to do that is to be present. And when we are present, we find that all of life is informing, is coming to us. All that's needed, everything happened at the right time. I read this beautiful quote the other day, that life is not happening to me, life is happening for me. It's a quote by Byron Katie. Life is not happening to me, life is happening for me. Everything happens at the right time.
I'd like to add on to that, it's happening from me.
Beautiful, from me, or even as me, you know, and that's great. So it's not even a separation between life and me, it's just life. In fact, one common thing we say in meditation is come back to the present moment, or, you know, be aware of the present moment. But the true understanding is that you are the present. You are the present. And a moment is not a component of time. A moment is something that transcends time, because time is based on thought. And a moment is reality. Moment is, it's a gap between thoughts to get a glimpse of what's really going on. That's what a moment really is.
It also, mentioning that, kind of reminds me of looking through a window and if there's junk on it or a stain or even a reflection, getting confused that is what you're trying to look at. That's just covering the surface, or our thoughts, the distractions, our quote-unquote imperfections, what's wrong with us, is really just what we're layering on top, knowingly or unknowingly. I mean, most of us probably wouldn't make ourselves feel bad on purpose. But inherently, you are that moment. You are here. And that's just covering it up. The teacher, right. There's lots of teachings that actually talk about how it's like finding a diamond. Most are found in the earth, covered in who knows what. And
they don't look very special. They just look like an ordinary stone, isn't it?
In fact, and if we relate it to gold or something, all these other metals people find valuable, is the same thing. You may not even be able to see it. You have to maybe even melt it down till that melts out. But it's no less valuable. People will still go nuts about diamonds,
that's
even though
it'd
be covered in filth, because they know that, well, it's a diamond. Just wipe the filth off, and it didn't hurt its worth, its value. I still value that. It's still untainted to me. Well, you're that diamond.
So coming back to meditation, it's meditation, or in India we call it sadhana, which is cultivation or practice, which is, you already are that diamond, you already are that gold. It's just about polishing it, purifying it, releasing all that's gotten mixed up in it and is pretending to be it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this whole process of purification, clarification, and like you look at the reflection of a moon on a lake and you see all these waves, and it's kind of confusing now. There are all of these different reflections of the moon all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one moon. It's not all of those different reflections. It's coming back to that oneness behind all the seemingly, like, I have so many sub-personalities, all of these different things going on, different thoughts, different opinions. Coming back to something that's more constant, stable, centered behind that. So that's a great way. That diamond analogy of yours is very good. It's about discovering who you really are. It's not about achieving it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about uncovering it.
Which we may need those paths and journeys and exercises to realize after we've gone around the world, we've come back to where we are and seen it for the first time, that quote. They may be helpful and may be very fruitful in who we meet along the way. That's great. But yeah, from what I gather from most of the teachings and from practice, it's not only are you that inherent, you're okay, you're you, and just we identify with the passing thoughts and identities and failures or goals or whatever, but it's also turning it around and looking at it, at yourself. Because you mentioned earlier that seeing is happening, hearing, and then even feeling and experiencing. Well, who is it?
Mm-hmm.
It's turning around and seeing what is it? This moment,
beautiful,
this being, life is happening right now. And we're pierced outwards, looking around, thinking that person has it.
One nice way of pointing back to that is a lovely question, which is, who would I be without all my stories? Who would I be without all my stories? And that question really instantly, in a way, it just uncovers everything. It gives you a glimpse. The first time we do it might be a little unsettling. Who am I without all my stories? You just feel like you're falling into a black hole. Like, who would you be without the story that you're falling into a black hole? So whatever experience you have, it's really powerful. And in fact, this actually points back to what I was defining meditation as earlier. It's an intimate meeting with yourself, without stories, without opinions. So meeting yourself without your stories is meditation. Meeting the other person without your stories, this is love, this is connection. And meeting all of life without our stories. I don't know a better definition of enlightenment than meeting life without our stories. And that doesn't mean that there are no stories. It means that you know a story to be a story. Which means you're playing, like right now I'm playing the role of someone who's sitting here and getting interviewed. It's just a role. It's not who I really am, you know. That role, that these roles keep changing. After a while, I'm going to be, you know, a husband, or I'm going to be a friend, or I'm going to be a teacher, or whatever it is. But these are just roles. They keep changing. So we don't confuse the role we are playing with who we are. And we still play the role really well, but we know it's just a role. That's the gift of meditation.
Not investing everything into it.
Exactly.
To the point that we believe it.
One thing that it leads to very practically is what I found in most of my teachers, all my teachers, is that they have this light presence. They have this sense of buoyancy and lightness, and they're not held down. Like you can't hold a water bubble, air bubble down. It has to come up, right? In water, you can't hold it down. It always comes up. In the same way, there's a kind of buoyancy, a joyfulness of life, a lightness in their step, a lightness in their gait, and they don't take life so seriously. They have a lightness. In fact. I find this is one distinction between religion and true spirituality or true wisdom teaching. The religion can get very heavy and, you know, full of philosophy and ideas and what we're supposed to do and should do. Whereas in true spirituality or true wisdom practice or people who are living this way, you find there's a great sense of humor. There's often a laughing at oneself and laughing at one's own limitations and a great great joy is what I saw. There's a famous teacher in India, in fact, worldwide. His name was Jiddu Krishnamurti. J. Krishnamurti, he's passed away now. And he lived to be more than 90 years old, perhaps 90 years old. And somebody asked him, you know, what's your secret? You're so old and you're so energetic. You're so full of life. What's your secret? So he smiled and said, my secret is that I don't mind what happens. I don't mind what happens. Now, this is the gift of meditation, not minding what happens. But for that, you have to learn to not mind your own mind.
So Otherwise, it just becomes the new technique.
So now we're playing with words. So by first of all, in meditation, you're minding your mind. You're paying attention to your own mind. And the more you pay attention to it, this is just, it's like someone called it MIND, meaningless internal neurodrama. Something like that. Like endless neurodrama, endless inner conversation, likes, dislikes. And after a while, you just start getting amused. All right, this mind is doing its own thing. These feelings are doing their own thing. The body is doing its own thing. And a sense of I am the sky. And all these life experiences are like passing weather. This is what we talked about earlier, the foundation. Mm-hmm. You get in touch with your foundation, which is unaffected by all the ups and downs of life. And so little by little, in a nameless, in an indescribable way, something within you gets very secure, gets very peaceful. A sense of I am life. Life is me. This is one. We are all one. Everything is happening. And there's a sense of everything is supporting. I'm always supported. And the only appropriate response is gratitude.
Very, very beautiful. And so there is an experienced reality. I can't talk about any absolute reality or what that is, or all these teachings point to that. But I mean, we do go through harsh things. There are very many chaotic and stormy events. There's lots of storms we go through. There's very harsh weather. This is not to say that, oh, it's all okay if I just say it or think it, or, you know, it's not just putting on the rose-colored glasses. It's just not allowing that our normal tinted, it's not giving that any more reality than it has. So it's not this necessary positive psychology of just saying everything's okay and I'll just have no preferences. I mean, things do happen. You know, things get really rough and gets really tough. But one, being aware of what is actually happening and being grounded in that is going to be more helpful than most things to deal with that. But as you brought up, it's like the sky. You know, there are some very dark days and night and winter here, and then the heat. But it's all passing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, the sky is still unaffected.
Mm-hmm.
And you are that. So there is a very real experience of things may need to change. And there's a time where maybe it doesn't, but we just need to be with it. But we'll never know until we're here, showing up. Must be present to win. Must be present for life. But really, we don't typically just drop down dead every time a storm comes, because we know it's going to pass. We know the sun is still shining. The sun did not get destroyed. Mm. It is still out there.
Correct.
Even though it's cloudy, or even though it's night. And so these very real, I don't know how true they are, but they're real events. Mm. It's real to you. I don't know if it's true, if that makes sense. You can ask yourself. It's something you're really experiencing, but how true is it? And we can always settle in and find out where that is for ourselves. We can always try this out. This is not having to take anybody's word for it. It's a meeting with yourself. This is your own well-being at stake, and your own discovery of yourself, and your journey to whatever you want to be aware of and here for in life.
I'd like to share three principles that I found and continue to find very useful. It's they're the group called the Zen Peacemakers, and they are practicing not only meditation, sitting down quietly, doing your own practice, but they believe in bringing that peace into the world. So in a way, you could say they're engaged, they're bringing their practice into the world. So they have three beautiful principles, which I often remind myself of and I like very much. And they're very simple. The first one is not knowing. And not knowing is to move at the speed of life, as opposed to the speed of thought. Speed of thought goes at the level of assumptions, judgments, I know, or even the sense of, oh, I'm so unfamiliar with this, which is assuming that you don't know again. But not assuming you don't know and not thinking that you know, but truly not knowing, which means meeting this moment with freshness, with a beginner's mind. Meeting any relationship with freshness, a beginner's mind, this is not knowing. And this is the foundation. Because truly, what do we really know? I mean, at the end of his life, the most influential thinker or philosopher of the West is Socrates. And he said at the end of his life, is all I know is that I know not, right? So that is a great discovery, to know that you don't know. So the first one is not knowing. The second one is bearing witness. And bearing witness means going beyond, I think you should do this, or, you know, I assume that's what you're feeling. And again, empathy is coming and really connecting with that experience of the other person. What is it like to be in the shoes of that person? You've got to get out of your own story. So not knowing, bearing witness to their pain, bearing witness to their joy, bearing witness to their uncertainty, not being in such a rush to find a solution and give them some solace or give them something to hold on to. No, just sit there with them for a bit. Just breathe with them for a bit. Just hold their hand. Just connect with the pain of the other person. This is the second one. And the third one, and this only comes third, is loving actions. So very often we start with what we think is loving actions. And then what we get is reactions from people. Say, wait a minute, I'm doing all this for you and you're just reacting. That's because we jumped the gun. So you start by not knowing, meeting people with a fresh mind, open mind, or I would even say no mind, no stories. Second is bearing witness, tuning in to what is it like to be in your presence right now? What does it feel like? And the third is, and only then, and this is often going to surprise us, loving actions. It is a combination or a synergy or something beyond that what you could have expected will happen. And it'll be exactly appropriate to what is needed in the moment. And this for me is a great summary of what we've talked about today. Because not knowing, meditation teaches us the art of not knowing. And with intention, loving intentions, compassionate intentions, friendly intentions, supportive, serving intentions, helpful intentions, we connect deeply with the other person. We bear witness to their pain. And now we don't just keep it at the level of thinking and feeling. We bring it into action. And we, like, you know, you're hosting the show. You're not just reading and learning by yourself. You're making an effort to share this with the world in your own way. So the different ways in which each one of us, given our talents, can support each other, and that's loving actions. As we apply these three principles, we learn to live more consciously, and every day becomes a beautiful adventure.
And I don't know anything. That's why I have everybody else come on talk. And one of my favorite teachers talks about how if we're present and truly aware, instead of worrying about our happiness or suffering, if we pay attention to the causes, instead of trying to get rid of suffering or create happiness, if we pay attention to the causes, a little more wise action, even avoiding the causes of what leads to pain. And so what he summed up exactly what you're talking about, is when we're aware of that, when we do the, after the first ones, the loving actions seems to just take care of itself. Mm. When you've laid that foundation,
it flows by itself.
That takes it's care of itself. So it's that's what my teacher said. He said, take care of the causes and the conditions, exactly. The results will that's take beautiful. Care of themselves.
That's so true.
And so, folks, I invite you, this is just an open invitation, if you'd like to stay tuned and try out a little practice for yourself. And I suggest just an open curiosity, open-mindedness, to see where it takes you, and you'll find your own way after that. So if you'd like, Nithya, if you would lead a little bit of meditation and some guidance.
Sure.
To put some of this, because we've just been, you said happiness is here and inside out, and we can't go around it. And so really we've just been talking about that you already are that.
Exactly.
And so put a little bit of this to the test.
Excellent. So let me just do a small little practice with you. And it's more an experiential thing, so just follow along. The first thing I'd like you to do is just to notice where you are and what you're experiencing. And you may be seeing certain things or hearing certain things. So what are the sensory experiences of this moment? Notice the colors, the sounds, if there are any smells. Outer experience. And now, also notice the space within which all these outer experiences are happening. Recognize space. And now, if you like, close your eyes. Become attentive to any inner experience. Could be feelings in the body. Could be the flow of breath. Could be any tightness or discomfort in the body. Any thoughts, any emotions, any inner experience. And now, also become aware of inner space, the space within all these experiences are happening. So there's outer space, there's outer experiences, there's inner space and inner experiences. And suppose I just drop the word outer and inner, suppose we drop that boundary. We're just left with experiences and space. Some experience registered on some sense door, and the space within which it is happening. And if we also drop the distinction between these two words, experiences and space, all we are left with is life. And if we also drop the distinction between life and the one who is experiencing life, all that remains is what is. And at this point, I bring up the same question. Who would you be without all your stories? Who would you be without all your stories? And in this way, we have had a small little practice, coming back from our outer persona, slowly guiding ourselves back to our essence, our inner essence. It's a journey of attention, it's a journey of intention, a journey of foundation, reconnecting with who we really are. Thank you very much. It's been a joy to be with all of you.
Thank you. It's been quite an honor to have your presence, your insights here on the show and in my life as well, in everybody's life. I know so many people that have been profoundly influenced positively from you, from just what you've shared and just you being you, helping to make this wonderful valley even better, offering those. And so, folks, if you're interested in some other resources, you know you can always tune into the show every Thursday at 3. And then in the fall, Aggie Radio will be going to FM. All these shows are still getting podcasts, so if you've missed a show or want to re-listen to one, they're on Aggie Radio, radio.usu.edu, for all the shows on there. And also, if you want to check out any more resources, you can go to our USU Meditation Club page. It's through MyUSU portal. When you're in MyUSU, the home page, all the links, Canvas and Banner on the left side, at the bottom or the top, they'll say a little link of View Communities or Manage Communities. When you click on that, it'll bring you to a list of all the clubs and organizations that are on that page here at USU. And then scroll down to USU Meditation Club. On the right side, if you click on Join, then you can open the folder to check out all the stuff in there, to find out anything helpful for you or if you knew anybody that wanted to. Lots of guided meditations, how to, lots of resources, tons of it. The academic papers I even talked about, it's there open-handedly for you if you wanted to check out. If you're not a student or you don't have an A number, you can also, as always, email usumeditationclub@gmail. Can send you anything you'd like, or at least point you in the right direction. That's really, really all I can do, is say, this is what I've tried and it didn't work. And if there's something that is positive about this experience, then try to do a little bit more of that. And so also on there's lots of other groups in the Valley. If you're interested in checking those out, a couple of them meet at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship House. That's on 596 East and 900 North. There's meetings Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And so
7 to 9 p.m.
7 to 9 p.m.
on Thursday.
For all those days. 7 to 9 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, or Thursday. They're all different groups. They all focus on these wisdom traditions, lots of insightful, practical ways to use these skills and tools in our daily life. And lots of good stuff out there, folks. It's all there for you to check out. And just want to do a shout out to my two of my nieces that listen, to Kenzie and Gracie Wynn and Mackenzie Grossman. If you're listening, they're from Boise. And just want to say a little shout out to you too. Also, thanks to True Blue Mobile Lube, came by and gave us an oil change. It's really neat because they're mobile, and so I think it's a little better for the environment, instead of every person that owns a car going to the shop and finding the time to do that. It's one person who's already on the road, locally owned and operated.
That's
just
so amazing.
Comes to you. Could even be while you're in class or at your work. Who knows? But they come to you and also give USU student discounts, pretty competitive prices. I just wanted to say thank you to them. Little shout out as well. And thank you to everybody who was listening. I hope to have you back next Thursday. And you're listening to Aggie Radio. This is Mindfulness on Air. Everybody stay mindful, be safe, and enjoy your weekend.